Everything Old is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show.
It may well possess a rudimentary intelligence.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Felt a great disturbance in the force.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ray.
Come on, Mark, like a job for me.
Where's the goodies?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
I bet you wouldn't have done anything like this if Mom and Dad were here.
You filthy criminal.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Here are your hosts, Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Eddie, you are not an athlete.
I just needed to find the right sport.
Britain hasn't had a ski jumper since 1929.
I'm going to be a ski jumper.
He's going to break his neck.
I take jumping very seriously, nearly as much as proving people wrong.
Welcome to Everything Old is New Again. This is Douglas Viviani with the rather determined David Cohen.
Ever the underdog.
There you go. Because this year we saw the achievement of the underdogs in the Apollo Creed movie. Did you see that one?
Yes. Excellent movie.
Son of Apollo Creed, actually, in Creed. And the Olympic skier we just heard about, Eddie the Eagle.
Yes.
You remember this guy? He was in
the 80s. But I do now. You've been educating me about it.
He's tremendous. We'll get into that. But it got to thinking about the underdog story. And the question is really, is this uniquely American? Even when the heroes are not American, it seems that we as Americans bring these stories to light and enjoy them. Is this true of every society? Like, did the Romans, did the Greeks back in the day, the Mesopotamians, the Egyptians, did they revere the underdog? That's the question.
And I think you have an answer.
I have an answer. You're going to have to wait because we're going to go through this entire show examining that on Everything Old is New Again. Before we do that, I wanted to take a moment to welcome a new affiliate. We're very excited to welcome KXL FM. Where they'll be playing Everything Old is New Again every Saturday at 6 p.m. That's 101 FM, Portland's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
And that's Portland, Oregon, just to be clear. Not Portland, Maine.
That's correct. Some clear across the country from Maine.
Some of my favorite bands are from Portland, Oregon. Did you know that?
Like
Slater Kinney, The Shins, The Dandy Warhols, Esperanza Spalding.
Is this kid kidding me? You've heard of these bands? I never heard of one of them.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
You know. Did you read that off of Wikipedia?
No, I'm kind of clicked into, you know, what's happening around today, as opposed to you being the yesterday guy.
Yeah, who's the band from yesteryear that came from Portland, do you remember? Do you know?
The band from yesteryear.
I showed it to you earlier.
Tell me.
Don't remember the Kingsmen and Paul Revere and the Raiders?
Oh, Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Yes, and Louie.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You know all those old...
Well, listen, welcome Portland. We're excited... And you'll get to listen to more of the thrills and adventure of Everything Old is New Again on every Saturday night at 6 o'clock on KXL 101.
Yeah, before you go out, check us out.
Yeah, right. While you're getting ready. It's not
exactly
a bad idea.
Exactly.
Back to our theme of the day. Let's go all the way back to 111 B.C. Mm. And listen to this.
I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus. Do you remember that movie?
I do, but you made it sound like that was a recording from 111 BC. I don't think the audio was that advanced.
It wasn't that good. It was very grainy. I had to really dig in and clean it out. What do they call that? I enhanced it with HD technology. And digitally enhanced.
Amazing.
And that was Tony Curtis, Kirk Douglas.
Sure.
And the tremendous movies, I'm Spartacus. But it wasn't just a movie made in the 60s. It was, of course, going back in history, revisiting, looking at the underdog, one of the first ones named Spartacus, who was a slave, right? And he had a slave revolt in the Roman days. But think about it. Roman society did not honor that struggle. In fact, that story was buried until the 1760s, when it was resurrected in France during the French Revolution. So think about it. For 1700, 1800 years, that story was buried. Actually, he died in 71 BC, to be exact. But we're talking about 1800 years. So history, as they say, is written by the victors, right? So the Romans, if they were people that admired the underdog and the story of the underdog, they would have revered and that story would have survived. There's only 5,000 words on Spartacus altogether. That's like three chapters of a novel. Think about it. There's not a lot on this whole story because my preposition is that back in the day, the individual that has to overcome these obstacles are not always revered.
So you think this is an American thing?
I think it's not created by America, but I think it's
Americans
very...
like it. The Americans
yes,
like it.
It's very much revered by Americans. Let's take a look. Because to me, let's think about it. The old civilizations, they used to go by this phrase, right? Fortune favors the strong. And I think in America, we came about as an underdog country, and we celebrate that. But let's take a look at some movies that America celebrates individuals that have to have overcome obstacles, like Pride of the Yankees, where Lou Gehrig had to overcome ALS. People love that story and feel for that gentleman, no?
Lou Gehrig? Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I mean... They did, and people still love that movie to this day. It's a tearjerker, man.
Yeah. I think that here in America, we love these movies, but I don't really think we practice the actual encouragement of the underdog in everyday life. But we'll get into that.
Interesting. We'll definitely get into that. But let's look at the admiration first through movies. It was My Left Foot, The Speech, Beautiful Mind with Schizophrenia.
What's the speech?
A look at. The Speech was the one where the King of England had to take a course to public speaking.
Yeah, he was a real underdog, that King of England. I was really rooting for the King to win.
Well, he was an underdog in that he was very ostracized because he could not speak in public.
Yeah.
And then you actually, at the end of the movie, love that he did this speech without any modifications whatsoever to the actual
language. No, it actually was a good movie.
It kind of worked, you know. So did Born on the 4th of July, Coming Home, Individuals That Are Paralyzed in Vietnam, two separate movies, right? Tom Cruise and John Voight. Children of a Lesser God, a deaf Marley Matlin.
She's still deaf, yes.
Right, but she overcame that to even win an Oscar. Daredevil himself was blind, the miracle worker.
Daredevil.
Yeah, what do you think?
I thought we were talking about real okay.
Well, it's this movie, and it's been a comic book since the 1960s.
Yes.
Miracle worker, Helen Keller, right, was blind and deaf. Elephant Man, John Merrick, remember him?
Yes.
I'm Not an Animal. Rain Man celebrated autism.
Yes, it did.
Forrest Gump. Developmental disabilities and a spinal cord injury. So that's just a short list of movies that America has produced to revere the underdog overcoming obstacles like crazy. What do you think?
I agree.
All right. Now, what are you saying? You're saying that even though we do that in our everyday life, it doesn't necessarily
I think it's a bit hypocritical. I think we like to root for the underdogs, but when we see an underdog... I mean, how do you define an underdog? Maybe somebody, like you said, somebody with autism or somebody who's physically challenged in some way or someone of another race or religion, what have you. I don't think we, you know, we're sitting there going, rah, rah, come on, guy in the wheelchair, you can do it.
Yeah, I think of an example, we were talking about this before, where, you know, you're in Portland or you're in New York City or a city and you're walking the streets or you're walking up the, you know, escalator, you got to get somewhere, and here's this guy with a cane or this guy with a limp or this guy, you know, or gas. Was having difficulty walking, and to them that's a huge achievement. What they're doing is walking upstairs. To us it's like, oh my god, get out of the way, I gotta get to work. You know, it's reality setting in. And
let alone, you know, trying to get to know them and what their story was and their struggle. And no, that's
also we admire, like a guy like Stallone who out of nowhere won this Oscar for writing and starring in Rocky, but then by Rocky 3 or 4 came around, he was no longer revered. People wanted to knock him off his pedestal.
Right.
So yeah. We do have that in America as well. So we'll come back and examine that a little bit more detail when we come back. But first, let's listen to one of my favorites here, Forrest Gump, and how he's overcome.
Now, you wouldn't believe it if I told you.
But I can run like the wind blows. From that day on, if I was going somewhere... I was running.
Come on back. Everything old is new again.
You're listening to Everything Old is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
German? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now. 'Cause when the going gets tough, The toughs get going! Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
Ah! Welcome back to Everything Old is New Again. That, of course, is from Animal House.
That was very inspirational to me.
Back in the day, I mean, what a classic. If you haven't seen that movie, get on board. That is classic of classic. That's John Belushi inspiring his classmates to rebel against the rules of the college.
Right, because the frat was an underdog. They were just a bunch of losers, and they were being threatened to get kicked off campus. But they rallied as underdogs, and we rooted for them.
And they overcame. And that's exactly what we're talking about here is the underdog. Why are we interested in this story? Why do we like this genre? And I would suggest to you part of that is these or are these inspirational speeches that you hear throughout almost, if not every one of these movies. Once you may hear two or three speeches through these underdog movies. And they're mostly well done. If the speech is not well done and not revered, I don't think the movie's going to be successful,
right,
quite frankly.
If it's too corny, no. Right.
Yeah, and the speech could only be even 30 seconds long. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's important to the genre. I remember back, it's easy for most of these underdog movies to be sports-related, so we have a lot more sports quotes than anything else. It could be anything in life, but we're going to go to, if you remember this movie, Rudy, and listen to a little piece of that. Yeah.
You're 5 feet nothing, 100 and nothing, and you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years. And you're also going to walk out of here with a degree from the University of Notre Dame. In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
How about that?
Right.
It's a pretty good message, huh?
It was. Still is.
I enjoyed that movie. It was a sleeper for me. If you haven't seen it, it's about a fellow that is...
Based on a true story.
Yes, yes. Right. But as a slight type of an individual, a short guy.
Not very athletic.
And just had the dream of playing for Notre Dame. And eventually, going to ruin for you, he does play a couple of downs of, I think, the last game of the season after the score was already, you know.
Yeah, and they carry him off on their shoulders, and it's very inspirational.
He just, you know, it doesn't sound like much, but he had no ability to do this, and he was able to achieve just through his perseverance and hard work.
Yep.
Now, what did he do the rest of his life is the question. I don't know. Like, when you peak in college like that and you're carried off the field, what's the act two?
I don't know. What was it like for you?
Well, I started a radio show called Everything Old is New Again. What can I tell you? Another one that I fell in love with, and it's the old original with Ralph Macchio, The Karate Kid, not the new one, which was the old original Karate Kid, and there were some great words of wisdom there as well.
Mr. Miyagi, fool!
No!
I'm afraid!
Cannot, must not. It's okay to lose to opponent. Must not lose to fear.
No, I'm afraid.
Oi, oi.
I'm afraid of
him.
All right.
Oi, oi. You stay focused. Then we shall use best karate skill inside. Now time,
head
out.
How about that? And then he does that.
I couldn't really understand him.
Oh, your best karate is inside of you. He says, it's okay to lose, but you don't want to lose to fear.
Right.
The best. Overcome fear. Do the best that you can. If you don't succeed, that's okay, as long as you've put it all on the table.
Right.
And he's saying, your best karate is inside of you. You haven't done the best thing yet. And if you remember, you haven't seen the movie, he does that crane move after that.
Exactly.
Gives you chills just thinking about it now. This is why we love these movies.
But it's funny because when you hear those, you know, if you just take those speeches out of context and you like read them on a plaque or somebody posts them in Facebook, they sound really corny, right? Like, oh, I've heard that a million times, right? But in the context of the movie, when you're actually seeing someone in an underdog situation and being explained that this is what you need to do, you know, you can project yourself, and I think that speech has more meaning when you see it played out within a story.
Yes, because you understand who that person is. A great movie and a great story, to me, is not on the minute you start is, you know, a chase scene and we're into the action immediately, whatever. You need to get to know who these characters are, what motivates them, why is this kid doing this, why is Mr. Miyagi doing this, who's probably, I guess, 65 plus, with a kid that's 17 teaching him these skills. Why are they even together? What's it all about? And it's an achievement not only for the Karate Kid, but for the gentleman that is inspiring him.
Right.
You know, if you ever teach anybody, if you ever have children or you do something in the sports field or anything where you can try to claim some ownership of being able to guide someone in the right direction, you also have achieved when they achieve, if that makes sense.
The other inspirational speech from that movie I still keep with me today is wax on, wax off. That still stays with me, right?
It is. I almost had that, but it's like 2 minutes long to really grab it. Because it's a kind of an inside joke. If you haven't seen the movie, if you have seen the movie, it's a method of training that was a surprise that worked for Danielson.
I think it's safe to say that anyone listening to this show is familiar with that movie.
And if you haven't, send me a note on everythingoldisnewagain.biz or oldnewagain@AOL.com. That's oldnewagain@AOL.com. And I will be sure to guide you in the right directions to how to get that movie if you don't know.
Doug will inspire you to go get that movie.
Exactly. Now, here's another thing. Rocky Balboa, or Rocky, the Rocky character, seems to be a kind of a dumb doofus kind of guy on the face, right? But after five movies, he's learned quite a bit of lessons through life, and he's now importing that to his son in what I think was a real good comeback movie for this franchise called Rocky Balboa.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
And that's from Rocky himself, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, it's almost Sylvester Stallone talking directly to you, himself.
Yeah.
Because he's not that character. We have an interview later on with him. You'll hear him. He's been, I don't know, in some ways maligned. This guy is an intelligent dude. Honestly.
Took steroids.
Yes, it's his profession. He had to take steroids to do this movie. What would he look like if he was some schlub at 65 in the ring with a younger gentleman?
It's called working out, Doug. It's called, you know,
But my point is the guy picked himself up from nothing, created this Rocky franchise.
Oh, you're talking about actually Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
He did. He wrote Rocky, had nothing. Locked himself in a room for a couple of days and just banged it out.
And actually, they offered him, they didn't want him to star in it, they offered him $360,000 in 76 to not star in it, just to buy the rights to it, which probably in today's world, I'm going to guess, is close to $1 million.
I'm going to take that, though.
Take it.
I want to be in a movie.
Because he wanted to go for it. That was his dream, was to be in this movie. He made it work, and then he was able to... 20 years later, I think it was even maybe more than that, 30 years later, he did this Rocky Balboa and able to teach his lesson. And he'll teach you that, he'll show you if you ask him. He had trouble having this movie made. They were all saying no to
him. Rocky Balboa.
Yes, he was having very big problems getting this movie made. He finally got it made for peanuts, made a lot of money. That's why Creed even was made, because this movie was so successful. And part of the reason why this movie was successful, because the underdog Stallone, as well as the underdog Rocky, was able to teach a very significant, important lesson, and was part of the inspirational speeches. Tremendous. We'll be on back. Everything Old is New Again. That's really loud.
This is Everything Old is New Again with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners.
How about that? Gene Hackman, straight off of the Poseidon Adventure into the Hoosiers. I mean, was that a tremendous movie or what?
It was. It was.
And basically a true story also.
Yeah, absolutely.
And true underdog. What we're finding here, I think, is though that these are all sports sports and more sports.
Right.
And that's because it's the easiest way. Right.
It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for life, yeah.
Because it's not just underdogs in sports. There are underdogs in every avenue of life, for sure. But I think, like you say, it's easier to show that, especially in film, through a sport. Now, I want to take a look, this section of our show, of Everything Old is New Again, and take a look at real underdogs. Now, they may be on the screen, but I want to take a look at real stories of real underdogs, and they're in sports, that have overcome. One that comes to light is a real event that occurred in the Olympics in 1980. Tell me if you remember this. There we go, U.S. against Russia. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think back in the 80s and 70s, I think the Olympics meant a little bit more. There was, you know, there was significant geographical enemies, if you will, that existed. Soviet Union was enemy.
The whole premise was that the U.S. sent amateurs and the Soviets were sending professionals.
Exactly. So. Enemy, I mean that in adversary in sports, right. What I'm trying to say.
Right.
And right, exactly. And who won? That one was
a bunch of college kids.
Right. And they went on to that. Actually wasn't the gold medal game, you remember?
No, that was the silver medal.
Right, they had to play.
I mean, that was the semifinals.
Right.
Then they first had to beat Finland for the gold medal?
I think it was Canada for the gold medal after that, I'm pretty sure.
No.
No?
I know it wasn't Canada.
All right, we'll have to look that
one
up.
We'll have to look it up.
But we've also seen that in U.S.-Russia Olympics in, I think it was 76 in basketball, where the basketball team almost beat the Russians. Again, the same setup. And remember Doug Collins at the end. Do you remember this game?
Yeah, sure.
Had a shot off and was going to win the game, and he was fouled, and they didn't call the foul.
Right.
Think about that. I mean, I remember that game. Who remembers games that, I don't know.
But that was Russians
reverse.
Upsetting us.
Correct.
Right. It wasn't that we went in as the underdog then.
Right. So how did we feel as the overdog, if you will?
Probably pretty bad.
Yeah. It was just a lesson learned in humility, I guess, a little bit. And speak of humble beginnings, you've got the Jamaican bobsled team in the 88 Olympics. Remember that?
What's it going to be, Star? What are the people going to be screaming when Jamaica takes the hill?
A Siri College. Cool running.
See you at the finish line.
With the kinds of push starts
right,
you guys are capable of, we might actually see the Jamaicans win an Olympic medal.
And did they win an Olympic medal? Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
No,
actually.
You know what happened? They had such shoddy equipment that their bobsled basically fell apart at the end, and they ended up their underdog win, if you will, was carrying their crippled bobsled over the finish line.
That's right, I remember now.
But the following Olympics, so 92 Olympics, in theory, I mean, this is what the story is that same bobsled team was then
legitimized.
Right, exactly. And so
it was U.S. beating Finland, I was right.
It was Finland.
So, yes.
All right, good for you. So how about that for a memory? You remember that from 1980.
It's crazy.
Think about it. So the underdog is ingrained. I mean, if that didn't mean anything to you, I know it's a sport, but still, if that didn't mean anything to you, there's no way you'd remember it. There's no way you'd remember from 1980. That's 36 years ago. And you're telling me, oh, by the way, Finland after that.
Yeah. Well,
the minutia, right? Because I think it's important for us. I think it's in our genetics as maybe as human beings, but certainly as Americans for some reason, we do revere these stories, such as the Cinderella Man.
Cutting loose with thunderous shots. A left to the body. Clear again with the right. Braddock covering up. Trying to hang on. Baird looking for the knockout. He doesn't want this one to go to the cards, folks.
There you go. James Braddock, who became champion of the world against Max Baer, father of the gentleman that was in Beverly Hillbillies. I forget his name.
Was that really his father?
Yes. Yes,
wow.
It is. 1934, that fight was.
He played Jeb in Beverly Hillbillies. Right?
Yes, Jethro. Jethro.
Jethro, sorry.
Is it also Max Baer Jr., I guess?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think
so.
About the name. I can't think
so.
Of the name, but that's it. Is that some trivia? But that was a 2005 movie revering a fight from 1934. And James Braddock was the ultimate underdog. He was Rocky-esque for sure, and he just kept on taking a beating, and he was in the Depression, if you remember, and that was something that people remembered Think about it. Enough to make a movie in 2005, some 70 years later than making the first movie about this James Braddock. Think about it. Why are we making a movie 70 years after the incident happened? Why are we making a movie 2,000 years after Spartacus occurred?
And why do we have to make movies about this? Why can't we just act like we would like to see ourselves act on the screen?
See, I think there is some level of truthfulness to that thought, that we admire and revere and want the underdog, but sometimes you don't even recognize the underdog in life.
Maybe because we feel we're the underdog, so we're like, okay, that'll inspire me.
But we're not the audience,
something,
so to speak, cheering the underdog on in
these
movies.
No, we're definitely not.
Yeah.
We're definitely not. That's the thing. I mean, that's why it's a little hypocritical. But if you look at it as, hey, that could be me up there as the underdog, I feel like in my life I'm an underdog, maybe that's where the inspiration.
Right.
You know,
but I think part of your lesson that you're trying to present, and I think it's important and does make sense if you really think about it, is the guy that just had a stroke or something, that's walking to his job, or walking, like I've seen a gentleman that I know in court for 10 years. He had a stroke. I was in the second floor and I could see through the windows, through the entranceway where he was coming in, and he used to be vibrant and he was having difficulties walking alone. He was being helped to walk into the courthouse, but he still got out of bed, put his suit on, had a helper, somebody, whoever it was, a nurse, whatever, I don't know who it was, helping, an aide, helping him get into court and do his job. And there I was on the second floor. I could see him in the movies. I'd have ran down those stairs, I'd have shaken his hand, I'd say, congratulations, how you doing? It was great to see you, great to see that you've come back.
And what'd you do in real life?
I went on to the next case. I went right into the courthouse. So right down where I was, I had a case I had to go to, like 10 feet away. I had to get into that courtroom to answer the calendar call. I wasn't blowing that off. Isn't that like an example, like our own lives? We are so selfish. I still think of this today. I should have gone down and said something to that guy. I could have missed the calendar call and come back an hour later. Would have cost me a lot of time.
What
and effort,
would you have
but,
said
you know,
to him if he went down?
Well, that's the thing. There's the other part of it is, in that particular situation, is there an element of embarrassment or uncomfortableness where should I be, you know, commenting upon his physical condition? Does he want me to? Would he prefer just to be overcoming this? Is it bringing him down if I do that? Would he be embarrassed to see me? Like, I don't know what his perception is. I don't know him that well, you know.
Right.
I know
right.
him in passing. I know him in court saying hello and having a couple of cases with him. So I'm not really friends and buddies with him.
But next time you see him, would you say, hey, you want to grab a coffee or something like that? Or
yeah, I definitely would. I would definitely try to see what in the world is going on next time around. It's on my mind, and let's just take a listen to The Impossible Dream, and we'll come on back.
Will be better for this.
Remember, this is a show on Broadway that was Don Quixote, 1605, written by Miguel Cervantes. Do you remember this? Think of the words. Listen to these words.
Two 4-minute eggs in glass.
Cup.
Yes, cup. And some whole wheat.
White.
Some white bread, yes. And a cup of mocha java with cream.
Milk.
Milk, yes, that's fine.
Count. Two in the water, easy.
Welcome back to Everything Old is New Again. W.C. Fields, that's from Never Give a Sucker an Even Break. And it lasts about 3 minutes. It is some of the funniest stuff you will ever, ever see.
Was it a movie or was it just a
short? It's a movie. It's a movie, but I should be clear. That section we just heard was a bit of a scene in a diner.
Okay.
And he's trying to order, and this waitress is not revering him as the underdog.
But it's funny how that definitely resonates to today, right?
It's
still the same thing.
That's 1930s.
Have a Coke. Is Pepsi okay? Yeah, sure, whatever.
And it goes on. And earlier on, I don't want to ruin it for you, when you look it up on YouTube, just watch this movie. It's great. But he first says, how about a steak? And she crosses it off. We don't have that. How about this? She crosses off. Then she starts crossing off stuff off the menu before he orders it, and his reactions and all. And that's the underdog in my world. In some way, W.C. Fields is the poster child of an underdog with a smile. If you watch every one of his movies, and a lot of comedy this is like, you've got the guy that's, you know, trying, he's doing the best he can, he's a kind of a good-hearted soul, but the world is just on him. and he's trying the best he can. And W.C. Fields' character is, he kind of has given up on his face, but it really hasn't. He still has that zest left.
It reminds me of you. It's like, this is all about you. You are the underdog. Nobody gives you any credit for anything, yet you're in there on the radio show every week going at it and making a name for yourself and getting out there, and you're the real underdog.
How about that? That's a good point. I think we're all, 100% of the people alive are underdogs at some point in your life. And I think that might be also some of this. At some point, you are identifying with the person on the screen, because there is something we're all an underdog about. What we want to do for a living, social life, friends, I don't know, something that happens in life that you need to overcome, whether it's financial, social, there's so many things. Everyone, at some point, is some kind of an underdog.
Absolutely. Yeah, so. And I think that's why it's not just Americans, but
right.
I shouldn't say that, but I think that's why at least we here in the United States love these stories.
Yes, and we have to say the American part of it, only in that it seems America, it seems to have a lot more literature, has a lot more, certainly films and television, entertainment about this topic.
Right.
So that's, I think, why, you know, we're reflecting that. And that's what we're reflecting, pop culture. Everything old is new again. Let's take a look at that Man of La Mancha. We just heard the Possible Dream last section. Let's listen to the death scene, a little bit about...
That's uplifting.
It actually really is. It's from Don Quixote, 1605, written in Spain by Miguel de Cervantes. And it is a story, if you don't know Don Quixote, of this older gentleman who he sees and lives a dream. He sees things that aren't there, but he wants them to be there. He dreams of a life that doesn't exist on this planet. But that dream, that person that he is, he doesn't care. He wants a better world. He runs into a young lady who is a person of ill repute, they call them, right? But she learns a lesson from him, and his theme of... Listen, just do what you want to do. Fight that fight. Even if you lose that fight, you can overcome. And she changes. I think this may reflect that. We'll see if it does on this clip.
To right the unrightable wrong.
He's still singing.
Yes.
To try when your arms are too weary. To reach... the unreachable star!
There you go. And it doesn't show her. She's right there saying yes. And later on, he dies and she says, that gentleman died, but Don Quixote isn't dead. The dream is alive. I will become this person he wanted me to be. I'm going to carry the flag, and I'm going to become a better person just from learning from this, what everyone would say is a lunatic in some ways.
Well, he also sings everything. It's kind of he's a bit of a lunatic.
He does. Well, in the Broadway play he does, not in the book. Listen to a little of inspiration or interpretation of this story by the Smothers Brothers. Listen, this is so funny. 1987, New Year's Eve, on the Johnny Carson show, 10 minutes before midnight. I don't know where all this came from, but that was the entertainment back in the day in 87 on New Year's Eve. That's what you would watch, Johnny Carson. How crazy.
Wow.
And this is what they presented, a little bit of it.
The Impossible Dream tells the story of the brave, the courageous Don Quixote. In this song, The Impossible Dream, it tells of his quest, his impossible dream, his vision, and his courage. And I think that this song has a message for every single person. Tom, what is the message this song sends to you?
Sorry, I really wasn't paying attention. I didn't hear it.
I think it's important you pay attention. What do you think I'm doing up here anyway?
I feel like Tommy Smothers like half of the time. No, you're Tommy Smothers. Not paying attention,
that's
actually.
Pretty
really
much
think
it.
About it.
That's right.
I mean, Smothers Brothers were a guest, and they were interpreting 20 years later, after this Broadway show was even off the air, this song. So it's in the culture. I mean, that's on Johnny Carson, New Year's Eve. Just saying, they did a bit about it and all that. But it was it's an inspirational, idealistic way to live. And let me say before, I know you have a point to say. I have a friend of mine that passed away 2 years ago at his funeral. I never knew that he was inspired by this song. His name is John S. I don't know if I've used the last name. But he knew he was passing away, and he set up this arrangement where he wanted this song, by Luther Vandross's version, to be played at his wake. So, or, you know, where you celebrate the person, people doing speeches and so forth. They said at some point, John wanted you all to listen to this song And we didn't know what it was. He loved all kinds of music from Kiss to, I mean, he was an aficionado. So where did he come from that this song, The Impossible Dream, was something he wanted everyone to listen to?
Right.
So, obviously. I mean, really, think about it. But that's pie in the sky in some ways. I think it inspired him to live a good life. But I don't know. We were saying before, sometimes that's not what we do, and I agree.
No, yeah, I think we're a little hypocritical when it comes to that stuff. We love to see it in the movies, but, you know, what do we do, Doug, every day? Do we really root for underdogs, people who, you know, are less fortunate than we are? Probably not, for the most part, right? I mean, you know, to me, it's like, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone else. I'm not trying to put myself up on a pedestal, but... You know, I think it's important to look for the everyday underdogs, the people that, you know, you can reach out to and help, right? You're talking about that guy in the stairwell at the court. Maybe not him in particular, but just maybe volunteering and being inspired by these people, getting to know them and the obstacles they're overcoming, as opposed to sitting down and watching a movie about it.
But it's also very internal sometimes as well, with my friend that passed away. I mean, I knew him very well. I knew him from the day I grew up, the day I was 5 years old, and didn't know that this inspired his way of living. So, yeah, I mean, there's two levels to that, too. People have to be a little, you know, open to that. Let's listen to a little bit about Stallone discussing this.
I'm not going to win. I'm going to get destroyed. But if I can still be standing on my feet, you know what? Then life isn't so bad. And I think, again, symbolically, at the very end of our lives, if we can still say, you know, we were never humbled. We were knocked down, but we got up. And I can say, I lived life with integrity, and I took all the blows, as the song says, and I still prevailed. I think that's a good epitaph for anyone.
That's a good epitaph for our show. I wish we could go into more detail discussing your topic as well, because it's very important to try to look at it, look over to the other guy or the other gal, and see what they're going through. The kids crying in the, in the store or in the diner or whatever. What's really going on? There might be something more to the picture than you are seeing, and try to empathize with these people and try to show that the underdog is something that we care about. And everything old is new again.
Ain't gonna be no rematch.
Don't want one.
Everything Old is New Again is sponsored by the Law Office of Douglas Viviani. Douglas Viviani has been providing quality legal service for over 26 years. We're a general practice firm and can handle any legal matter you may have for a reasonable fee. If you're involved in a car accident, starting a business, planning your estate, or need a criminal attorney, please call 631-681-1910 or email us at vivianilaw@aol.com for a free consultation. Get the justice you deserve. Contact the Law Office of Douglas Viviani at vivianilaw@aol.com.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1, stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything, your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2. Call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-940-7237. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-940-7237. Step 3. Congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-940-7237. That's 1-800-940-7237.
If you're looking for world-class website hosting at a fair price, ParaNetworks is your best choice. Founded in the early days of the web and still going strong today, ParaNetworks now hosts hundreds of thousands of websites for its demanding customers worldwide. Setting the standards for excellence, ParaNetworks has a technical support staff that's second to none. A highly stable company with top-of-the-line technology. ParaNetworks offers total reliability and flexibility for your website, and even a money-back guarantee. Whether you're a professional web designer or a beginner just getting your site online, ParaNetworks has a web hosting plan that's right for you. Make the move today. Log on and learn more at pair.com. That's PAIR.com. Pair Networks, world-class web hosting at a fair price. Visit us at pair.com. Pear Networks.